Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Hit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
r/ is a hilarious podcast where Dabney Bailey uses ridiculous voices and emotions to read aloud the week's craziest Reddit posts.
He reenacts various Reddit threads covering wild stories and secrets, petty revenge, relationships, and much more.
So if you're looking for a daily distraction and a laugh, check out r/ wherever you get your podcasts.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
Hey everyone, I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
And we are the hosts of The Horror Show, the show that dissects, mutilates, dismembers, and butchers all of your favorite and not so favorite cult classics and horror movies. We're talking about everything from Lori Loughlin dancing on a BMX bike in Rad, all the way over to 80s classics like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street.
Join us every week as we pick another movie that we try desperately to find the good in while laughing our way through the bad.
And there's a lot of bad. Looking through his movies, he appears to just love frogs, because then we get Toad Warrior in 1996 and Max Hell Frog Warrior in 2002. So,
not a fan of horror? Don't worry about it. Almost every episode is filled with personal anecdotes and jokes about all things entertainment.
So join us every week on any of your favorite podcasting apps and services, or find us at IHateHorror.com or on Instagram at IHateHorror.
Maze, Amin and I have already watched this for Cinephobe on Mad Dog Sports Radio. Had you seen this before?
I'm having a hard time remembering if I've even seen the original Teen Wolf all the way through.
Oh, okay.
So no, definitely not.
I did not know it was a racist movie until... I mean, let me know.
The original Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
I'm loosened up on Teen Wolf 2. Zach, not so much.
No, I think it's even more racist.
Yeah, I don't think it's that bad.
The metaphors are very confusing.
It is a lot of mixed metaphors.
A lot of mixed metaphors. Oh, my God. It's so many mixed metaphors that they even fuck up the idea of a proverbial towel.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they don't even get that right.
Oh, my God.
Your picks have been horrible, man.
It's the point. It's the point of the show. Isn't it? Isn't it? It's possible. I don't understand what this podcast is about.
Poppycock. It's a fuckhouse.
On a weekly basis, we are consuming more concentrated bad movies than probably anybody in the history of mankind.
Poppycock.
What story? What story? What are you talking about?
Do you want lunch?
I have yet to laugh in this movie. I'll just tell you that.
You picked it, motherfucker. Just remember that.
You know what the problem with Hollywood is? They make shit. Unbelievable, unremarkable shit.
I was legitimately offended.
You were offended?
I was offended.
I didn't know you could get offended.
I was offended.
This did it.
If I were gay, I wouldn't be offended.
They're fucking making shit up, I mean.
Inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail.
Bees don't lie.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm there holding a mic in my hands and now I'm talking all over.
Cinephobe, the podcast where we break down the movies you're afraid to admit you love. I'm Zach Harper, that's Amin Alhassan, that's Anthony Mays. By the way, folks, if you have a submission for Cinephobe that you want to hit us up on the Discord for or on Twitter, please do so. But in doing so, reminder that it needs to be a 40% or lower on Rotten Tomatoes for either the audience score or preferably the critic score. Quit sending us movies, and we love them. By the way, we love the suggestions. We love the activation of the audience. We love it.
We love some of them. The guy who suggested Theodore Rex, I fucking hate you. I will always hate you.
Ike, the cinephobe terrorist.
I forgave Ike, but I don't think anyone else has.
I have not.
I will never.
We love the submissions. We love the activation of the audience. We love all that. But by now, you gotta know what it is. It's got to be 40% or less on Rotten Tomatoes for the critic score or the audience score. We'll take either of those. So please, only submit those movies. Don't submit like Citizen Kane and go, what about this one, guys? Rosebud, am I right? Don't do that.
The latest example I have is Blood In, Blood Out was suggested. It's 55% by the critics, 94% audience score. That's just not going
to
cut.
It's just not even close. You got to get some bots to bring one of those way down. This week on Cinephobe, we watched the 1987 boxing comedy Teen Wolf 2.
The term boxing and comedy should both be used very loosely.
Very loose. It is starring Jason Bateman in his film debut, gentlemen. Film debut. He had been in Silver Spoons. He was on Little House on the Prairie, but he'd never done a real movie before. So this was his first one. You guys know him now from like Arrested Development, Bad Words, Ozark, Juno, all that stuff, right? Tons of stuff. Amin, do you remember how he got this movie role?
I do, because the first time I watched it for Cinephobe on Mad Dog Sports Radio, by the way, if you are a serious XM subscriber, Channel 82, Mad Dog Sports Radio on Friday nights at midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific, me and Zach, guess what we do? We do sports movies for Cinephobe Sports right there. It's a little different from the podcast.
Right.
More streamlined for a radio experience. But if you're listening, definitely listen and give us feedback on that. This episode we're doing today marks the first time we are double dipping. We usually do separate movies for that. But Teen Wolf 2 was so cinephobe-tastic that we said, you know what, guys? We got to do this again. We got to do it again. So anyways, last time I watched this movie for Cinephobe Mad Dog Sports, my exact first notice, who is Kent Bateman? Because this movie is produced by Kent Bateman. And Zach, we found out that Kent Bateman is not just coincidentally named with the same last name as Jason Bateman.
No, Maze, that is Jason Bateman's father. That's how he got this movie role. His dad produced it.
His dad's middle name is Kent, which is also Jason's middle name.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, we often deride nepotism, but in this case, nepotism gave us something pretty good.
It worked out. Yeah.
Like in the long run.
Absolutely. We also get Este Chandler in this one, the love interest. Este would go on to do an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and something called Terminal Bliss. But she's a visual effects person for Long Kiss Goodnight,
yes.
Pleasantville,
yes.
And Team America World Police.
She had a hell of a post-acting career.
She made it work.
Which is good because the acting part, woof.
Little rough. The movie also has John Astin, who was Gomez Adams from the Addams Family TV show, comedy legend.
Speaking of nepotism, Sean Astin's dad.
No way!
This is a nepotastic movie.
No freaking way! I never knew they were related.
This keeps happening to me because I was watching Being There with Peter Sellers, and one of the producers of that movie was Martin Schwartzman. And lo and behold, that's Jason Schwartzman's dad.
Amin, did you know Peter Sellers, father to NBA legend Brad Sellers? I made that up. That actually is not true. Actually, it might be true. I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but I don't think it's true.
Brad Sellers is kind of light-skinned, you know? Dude, I'm tripping that Mikey from the Goonies is the son of freaking Gomez Adams.
Wait, that's how you know Sean Astin?
Yeah.
Is Mikey from the Goonies?
Yes.
Not Encino Man? Not Lord of the Rings? Not Stranger Things? Not Rudy?
I've never seen Stranger Things. It took me a while to figure out that he was in Rudy.
What? He's the main character. Wait, is this a thing where you think Charles S. Dutton is the main character of Rudy?
Of course. Of course Charles S. Dutton.
The movie's about a groundskeeper at Notre Dame.
Charles S. Dutton is the main character, and then the best supporting actor would be Vince Vaughn in that movie. Who just looks disgusted the whole time. When I saw Lord of the Rings, I said, that Mikey from the Goonies. Wow, he put on a lot of weight. Is this true? Patty Duke is his mom?
Yep. Wait, I didn't know that.
Jesus Christ.
It would have been real hard to not have a career.
For real?
He tried.
He did try. We also get Kim Darby from True Grit, the original True Grit. We get James Hampton back as Uncle Harold. We get Mark Holton back as Chubby.
Yes.
Stuart Fratkin is the new Styles to tie the worlds together from the first and the second movies.
So, mate, since you haven't seen the first one, I don't know if you pick up on a lot of these kind of callbacks in this movie / outright ripoffs, but at the same time that this is married with a bunch of characters who were recast for this movie because apparently they just had better things to do. So chief among them, Styles. The Styles from Teen Wolf is not the same guy as the Styles in Teen Wolf 2. Also, the coach from Teen Wolf is not the same guy as the coach from Teen Wolf 2, even though they are supposed to be the same character. So it's a really weird kind of mishmash of borrowing heavily on themes from the first movie while at the same time not being able to employ everybody from the first movie.
Teen Wolf 2 is directed by Christopher Leitch, who had directed 45 different TV movies or TV shows of his 50 credits for directing on IMDb. This was his fourth movie and his second to last movie.
He wrote Universal Soldier. That seems to be the only thing of relevance that he's done.
The writer for Teen Wolf 2 is literally named Cringe. Spelled K-R-I-N-G-E.
It's true. We have Jeff Loeb and Matthew Wiseman for the story. They did Teen Wolf, Commando, and a bunch of comic book shit. And then Tim Cringe, who was the screenplay writer, known for doing an episode of Knight Rider, two episodes of Chicago Hope, a TV movie called Without Consent starring Jenny Garth.
Oh, I remember that one.
He also did Heroes and Crossing Jordan.
Yep, created Heroes. So fuck you, dude.
Wow. Okay, I never saw Heroes.
Neither did I.
Heroes was exciting for a little bit in the first season, and we got to this episode where the main two guys, the good guy and the bad guy, are finally going to fight, and they literally close doors in front of us and don't show us the fight. And I was like, fuck this. I'm out.
Let me say this about Heroes. Number one, Hayden Panettiere. Overrated.
As an actress or looks?
Overall, the hubbub about her.
You know what the creepy thing is that it's all these creeps who remember her as a child. So they see the way she's grown up. And now they think of her that way. And that's the creepy part of her. Also, wasn't she married to a Klitschko?
She was married to a Klitschko.
The other thing about Heroes. It was all right until Marvel pulled out its dick and said, this is how you do superhero fucking TV and movies. And then, and that was it. No one talks about that show anymore. Sorry, NBC Universal.
More like NBC.
Huh.
Synopsis for Teen Wolf 2. Todd Howard is a struggling teenager. Nothing seems to be going well for him until he turns into a wolf. Spoiler alert.
I mean, that's pretty much the movie.
Yeah, it is.
Let's go home.
Tagline, a hair-raising comedy. But we have alternative taglines.
Hair-raising comedy, I think, is just lazy and cheap. But what else do they have?
A hair-raising comedy starring Jason Bateman.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes all the sense.
He's off to college and ready for a howling good time.
There it is. I like that. That's like, oh, wait, what? Okay. It gives you enough.
Freshmen have always had trouble adjusting to college life, but never like this.
Generic.
Last one. High school was easy, but college is a whole different animal.
I see what they're doing there.
$3 million budget for this movie grossed $7.8 US and worldwide. That's a certified hit.
That is a success. Also, what the fuck did they spend $3 million on?
Kent Bateman.
Kent Bateman must have given Jason quite the payday.
2.8.
Before jumping into this movie and listening to the rest of the podcast, Teen Wolf 2 is available on Amazon Prime. Rotten Tomatoes scores. Teen Wolf 2 receives 7% from critics on 15 reviews. The audience, on almost 8,000 ratings, gives it a 17%. Amin? Would you like the positive or the negative reviews first?
You know, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, Zach, so give me the positives first.
Linda Cook of Quad City Times in Davenport, Iowa. No review, just 3 out of 5.
Linda did not watch the movie. Think about that. When you're doing feedback, right, for something, it's like, could you tell us, what do? You just vote everything down the middle, right? Neither satisfied nor dissatisfied. That's what Linda just did there.
Let's go to user Ryan M. 5 out of 5 stars. Amazing film. Jason Bateman is at the peak of his game for this one, folks. He takes the handoff from Michael J. Fox and just bodies this who genre. I think he meant whole genre. My favorite part is when he catches a frisbee with his bare mouth like a putt-putt. My dude JB is a boxer in this piece, and I know one human I would prefer not to be, the guy boxing him. Because homeboy is vicious with the gloves. And he is hairy as heck, so it's kind of gross to be in close combat like that. Anyhow, check out this film. So many loose ends are tied up from the first Teen Wolf. You won't be disappointed unless you're a total dingus who doesn't like good cinema. And if that's the case, then why are you even reading this review?
All right, Zach, you really have to start vetting some of these reviews a little harder. This guy's clearly trolling.
My favorite review.
You keep reading the troll reviews, the troll positive reviews.
I think he brings up a lot of good points.
The loose ends part?
Yeah, loose ends. Why are you even reading this? User Leanne W, 5 out of 5 stars. Jason Bateman truly shines in his acting ability to do two different characters in one movie. Wish this movie was longer, but was so nice to see and hear no swearing. Happy face. User Scott D, 4 out of 5 stars. Not as good as the first one, but the whole feel of it is what the 80s was all about. Is it? And then final one, and this is, I'm glad I picked this one, especially based on the start of this episode. User Peter H, 5 out of 5 stars. That's not the real Styles.
This Peter H loved the movie, but just felt the need to point out. Well, actually.
Negative ones. Barbara Schulgasser of Common Sense Media. Dreadful, unfunny sequel lacks charm of the original.
I was there all the way up until charm.
Empire Magazine. An anemic ripoff, interesting only as a minor 1980s artifact.
A ripoff of what? Oh, I guess the first one.
Michael Wilmington of the LA Times. The pacing is near cataleptic, and the movie's intended comic highlight is a frog fight in the biology lab. Isn't that just what you're dying to see and hear?
Did Ethan Strauss write that review?
TV Guide, it's hard to imagine a more calculated sequel than Teen Wolf 2.
Oh, man. You know what? on the nose, TV guide. I tip my cap.
Nigel Floyd of Time Out. This tedious sequel cast the producer's uncharismatic son, Bateman, as Fox's similarly afflicted cousin Todd, but offers only a faint echo of its predecessor.
Yeah, you know what that's called? Cold takes exposed. Who's uncharismatic now, bitch?
Kevin Carr of 7M Pictures. Why? Oh, God, why?
I mean, I asked that question a couple of times.
Rita Kempley of Washington Post. Bateman is bland and inoffensive in this dopey role, half of which is performed in a cheap hair suit that makes him look like an escapee from a polyester petting zoo.
I'm going to just disagree with all of that.
And then last two, these are from users. User Ben T, 1.5 out of 5 stars. This has to be one of the worst films ever made. Singing Werewolf Party? Really?
What do you think the 1.5 was for?
I don't know. Maybe he like really likes boxing.
No, it can't be that.
User Linda F, 1 out of 5 stars. I just realized that this Teen Wolf is Jason Bateman? Either way, don't bother with this one unless it's on right after the first Teen Wolf, which is what happened to me.
I can't imagine watching back-to-back Teen Wolves, man.
Also, if you're a TV channel, if you're playing the first one, play the second one. Get the rights to the second one. It can't be much.
You know what I hate? Back to the Future followed by nothing.
Give me all of them.
Give me all three.
Plus, the third one's the best one. I stand by that.
I don't know. It's not the best one, but I definitely like. I am with you. We are in a small vocal minority of people.
It's good.
Fight back against people who think it's not good. It is awesome.
Yeah, it's legitimately good. It's not Godfather 3. Amin, what is your first note?
My first note was, who the hell is Kent Bateman? Found out. By the way, before we start, I feel like I should just give everyone a refresher. Teen Wolf is an extremely racist movie. It is an allegory to what white people fetishize the black experience to be. So you got this guy, Scott Howard. He's very unpopular. He's kind of dorky and not cool. He's on the basketball team, but he's not very good. And then all of a sudden, he becomes this other thing. And what happens? First of all, basketball, he goes from being a kind of dopey vanilla player to having all types of sauce and dribbling, crossover, spin moves, very flashy style of play, windmill dunks, etc., etc. Something that he exploits on the court and at first is very successful and then turns everybody off because he's such a ball hog. But then he turns back into a white player to quote unquote play the right way, so that they actually win the championship that way.
Play the white way.
He becomes a wolf, all of a sudden super popular with all the girls, all the ladies love him. He's getting head in the dressing room, all types of crazy stuff. But then when public opinion turns on him.
Wait, is that the first thing you think of with being black, is you get head in the dressing room?
No, it's not the first thing I think of. It's the first thing that white people think of about black people. And then,
boy, I'd really like to get some head in this dressing room if only I were black.
No, it's like the idea is like, oh, he gets cast in the role because he's so cool and charismatic and da da da, and then all the bitches love him and da da da, and then, but then again the message is, oh, they don't really love you and they leave him, and then like he got to turn into a white guy again to find his one true love, right? He's walking down the hallway. No handshakes, all daps and high fives, including one really awkward breakdance move with the one other black guy in school. And so on and so forth. Goes to the school dance, goes out there, starts dancing, changes the whole dance routine. Everybody's following, copying his dance. Oh my God, they're such great dancers. They have such great rhythm, right? All of these things are just really what white people think being black is about. But again, because it is a Hollywood movie, we have to reinforce that being black, while it may look cool, is not what you want to be. And being white is the best thing ever. And that's why he turns back to the white guy, gets the girl, wins the championship, gets carried off on the shoulders. Nobody wants to see it.
Maze, I know what you're thinking. And I'm thinking the same thing. Hearing this theory is quite the privilege. See what I did there? White privilege.
Quick Bossa Nova. I can't help myself. I have to share with you guys. So the first time I met...
Then go back to my 750 credit score.
This long-ass introduction of B-roll from Hamilton University where the school song is being sung by a choir lasts 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
You timed it. Good job.
I timed it.
Because we wondered about that the first time.
Yeah, it's 3 minutes and 20 seconds till we get the building shot of Dean Dunn, Dean of Men.
It's not a building shot and then we go to his office and he has a sign outside his office that says Dean Dunn, Dean of Men. The entire motherfucking building is named after him. There's a building, there's a huge plaque outside that says
it is carved into stone.
Dean Dunn, Dean of Men.
Cut to Dean Dunn's office, and John Aston has a Rottweiler sitting in a chair, and Coach Finstock is in the other chair. He asks Coach Finstock if he knows why he's here, and Coach Finstock replies, "Yes, sir, 32.5 for a year and summer's off."
This guy's got some lines. Look, he was recast, but I gotta say, he's pretty funny.
He's great. The way for this college to get back to its glory days is by giving the alumni a boxing team championship.
I promised the alumni I'd give them a winning boxing team, which I put question mark after.
Why? Why are we talking about this?
What school is this where boxing, that's the one that the alums all care about? Fuck the football team. Basketball, go suck a dick. I want to know how we're doing in boxing.
This is the clumsiest Basil exposition we've had
today. It really is. It's really bad.
I love that term.
Todd Howard is supposed to be the key to this. He's a marching band geek who doesn't play sports. Finstock was the coach of his cousin Scott at Beakertown High for basketball. Now he's a college boxing coach. Todd got a full scholarship based on the coach's recommendation, to which he replies, "My recommendation? That's great."
Another great line. This dude really, really kills it.
Todd is picked up by Uncle Harold as they try to find his dorm. Harold says it's okay to be stressed about college, especially with his particular worry, then turns into a werewolf to punch that point home. Todd says being a werewolf skipped his family.
What a hypocrite. Uncle Harold kept this shit a secret for most of Teen Wolf 1. He's like at least 50 years old in that movie. Keeps it a secret at all times from his own son. Now this dude out here coming out the closet like, "I'm every wolf. It's all in me. And then you want to be wolf, wolf, wolf." In the first 2 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, it's something he hides from his family his whole life. And now all of a sudden he's just like at a crosswalk, turns into a wolf.
Yeah, man.
Wolf's really out of the bag, huh?
The werewolf makeup is terrible. But also, I don't know what I expected, because, like, what's a real werewolf look like?
Yeah.
I just know not this.
You sound like my man and said, "That's not the real Styles."
As they're about to pull into a space, what is that, a T-Bird? Is that a Trans Am?
Trans Am! Big movie for Trans Ams, baby.
Official car of the douchebag of the 80s.
Comes flying in, steals the spot. These hot girls and the tough guy get out of the car as Todd tries to say it was their space. By the way, Todd, total hornball immediately.
So it's a couple of things. First of all, yes, the Trans Am is the official. Like, if you ever in the 80s wanted to, like, make sure everyone knows this guy's a douchebag. How do we do it? How does he push somebody? Does he bully somebody? Got it. Have him pull up in the Trans Am. And everyone instantly knows that's someone you're not supposed to like. Second of all, what we constituted as hot in the 80s was basically who's in the hallway outside where we were casting. Old girl, man. I'm just like, huh? She looks like Honey Boo Boo.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry. That's a little harsh. That's a little harsh.
Like Honey Boo Boo if she got her life together a little.
Gus has a leather jacket and aviators to go with that Trans Am.
I love when she says,
"A freshman."
Her accent. Jesus.
Watching this movie, mates, kudos to you. You picked up immediately. It took me like until halfway through the movie to realize she's got a thick Southern accent.
It's awful.
Todd gets to his room and the fake Styles is there. Styles rigged this thing to room with Todd. While Todd's going through his stuff, he finds a Teen Wolf t-shirt.
Styles is wearing a t-shirt that says Drunken State University. I want it.
And lightning bolt shorts. I need the ensemble.
I don't want to infringe on Amin here by any means, but I'm picking up a little sexual tension from Styles.
Oh, I had some sexual tension that came along later.
Okay. Me, nothing from you?
No, not from Styles. I just thought overall this movie is curious, given that Styles went through the entire life cycle of what it's like to be friends with a werewolf and seems to have, from graduating college, high school to going to college, completely forgotten about that.
I guess he thought it was going to be different.
Yeah, I guess so.
Todd wants to get to his science classes, and Harold is worried about the sports scholarship that he's got as Todd walks back into his dorm with his groceries from Uncle Harold. He's introduced to Chubb, who is fencing in the hallway and stabs the bag of food. Chocolate milk comes out of the grocery bag, to which Chubby then tries because he's fat, and that's what fat people do.
Back when he meets Styles, Styles says, I got them vibes happening. Is this the origin of the vibes that Waz is always talking about?
That's a great question.
Oh, wow. That's like 1987 or whatever. By the way, Uncle Harold, when he gives him the groceries, he says he insists he got to give him some money just for some spending money. He literally gives him $2.
It was the 80s, man. Inflation.
$2.
Todd is mad his classes got changed by Styles, to which then Styles tells Chubb, that boy's got werewolf written all over him. Everything goes as planned. We're going to take over. We're going to take this school by storm.
Sounds like they're going to run a train on him. Maybe there is sexual tension.
Todd goes to the registrar's office and cuts the line to talk to the tough lady.
You remember going to go register for classes when you had to do it in person. You couldn't do it online.
I never had to do that.
So when I was at San Diego State, you could do it online. When I was at Sac City Community College, you had to go to the office.
I remember my first couple of, maybe my first three semesters of college, you had to do it in person. And then it went to online. And that was like a game changer. But yes, this scene right here, Maze, that's how people used to do it. Like you had to go there, have this thing filled out. And it was the most, that's why like people say they miss college. Whenever I think of college, I think of registering for classes. I'm like, I do not miss that shit one bit.
I don't miss college. What I miss is right after college. That's a peak time.
No. I'm sorry, man. I miss what I'm doing right now, minus kids. Like, making money and, like, having my bills on auto pay.
Yeah.
This is the highest moment. I know, you're such a lame. Oh, you went to be a cornball. I was broke. I was broke for most of my life. So, yes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Making money is way better.
Forgive me for liking disposable income.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Like, you're kidding me. Go back to college for what? I can do all that stuff now with money, though.
His eyes go red. His voice gets deeper. She changes his classes immediately. His reaction was borderline unprovoked.
Cut the line, as you mentioned. You're like five people and just cuts right to the front of the line, watches the dude in front of him get chewed out. And that, I guess, elicited the reaction. By the way, Maze, since you don't remember the original Teen Wolf, this is a callback. It's a callback to the first one where Scott Howard goes to buy a keg of beer from the liquor store. He's clearly underage because he's in high school. The clerk says, can't you get it through a thick skull? No idea, no beer. And that's when Scott gets really jittery and says, give me a keg of beer. And old man like shits his pants and gives him a whole keg.
Did Michael J. Fox's forehead also pulsate like Quado from Total Recall is in there?
Nope, just eyes and a little sweatiness and the voice. Regular Teen Wolf, even that scene takes a while to happen.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Like there's a slow build up, and every time he has a wolf kind of moment, it's kind of sprinkled in up until the final one where it happens to him at home.
And to be fair, like there's so much more story in the sequel, so you got to get it out of the way early.
Yeah, in such a rush to get to the good part. Let's get this call back over with.
The science teacher is also his faculty advisor. He wants to be a veterinarian, and she allows him to be in his class. She's real weird, by the way. She's a super weird teacher.
Something was up there, and they explain it much later, but...
Yeah, right.
There was a little bit of sexual tension.
Whoa,
or maybe okay. She's a biologist, and okay. She wants to study his anatomy.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I thought that she was a lesbian, and that's how they depicted...
Because of the haircut?
That is profiling.
Yeah, that's how they depicted homosexuality in the 80s.
Wow.
Like, they just didn't know how to handle it, so they're like, ah! Like,
you know what really killed me about that haircut? She had just the slightest tufts at the bottom of that she-mullet.
She just looked like Gozar from Ghostbusters, right? Like,
yes, she did.
That's yes. What she looked like, yeah.
Where's the gatekeeper? Where's the keymaster?
Right, exactly. He meets Nikki. She's the love interest, I guess, and it's the least sexual tension in the movie so far.
There's zero chemistry.
And they're in a science lab!
She's got the biggest glasses ever, which I guess nowadays are bad.
Well,
back
he does too, though. He's got grandma glasses.
He has some
but
big
her glasses are really bad. Her glasses are like the size of a TV screen.
That's how you know they're nerds, because they got glasses on.
Yeah. Okay.
Despite her being a female nerd, Todd has to mansplain to her how to turn on a microscope.
No, this is a key element. The fact that she does not know how to use an electronic microscope. She's like, there's nothing on this. She's very catty and snotty. Like, there's nothing on this.
Well, because she heard that he's a jock.
She couldn't find the fucking slide. He had to find it for her. Whoa, right? Nice. Pulls it out. It's right here. Hold on. It's right here. Maybe if you spent 5 seconds looking through that as opposed to staring at me when I'm having a private conversation up there, you'd find it. Gives it to her. She looks into the scope like, there's nothing on this. Well, bitch, you might want to turn it on. Does she say thank you? Is it, oh, my bad, man. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know. I was tripping. Nope. She just goes about her business. This is the stuff I couldn't do on the radio, so.
Now Todd goes to meet his coach.
Are you a coach? I need to talk to a coach. That's a great way to find somebody.
Trying to get an explanation for the scholarship. He sees a picture of Scott, his cousin, tells him he's not like that.
The coach yells at a janitor, you missed a spot.
Mop the basketball court, by the way. He finds out he's supposed to be a boxer. Dean Dunn comes to the practice, pours water on Todd after Chubb knocks him down, and he yells at Todd.
When he tells the coach, I'm not like my cousin. I know what you think. I'm not like him at all. The coach gives this weird long sob story.
Yes.
And so, Zach, I know you're probably wondering, or maybe you weren't wondering. Maze definitely picked up on it. Like, what a weird non sequitur that didn't make sense.
Yes.
Here's why. It's a callback to Teen Wolf 1, where Scott Howard goes to tell the coach that he wants to quit the team because he's having a lot of issues. And the coach goes on this long tangent. And at the end of it, it says, the way I see it, I should be asking you for money. Basically implying that the whole time the coach thought that this was all a scheme for Scott to kind of squeeze some dollars out of him. Right? And it's a great, it's actually one of the few scenes in Teen Wolf 1 that's very well written. Right? He's like, I got this kid. He played, his mom was a housekeeper. She had this pin in her hip, right? He wanted to quit. And he tells this whole story that it applies in no way to Scott's reality, right? It was very well done. This movie tried to do the callback and have the coach tell another kind of not applicable story, except it just comes off as the ramblings of a lunatic.
Now we get to the library. Nikki and Todd are fighting over the same book. She calls him a jock and says it's over his head. Todd overreacts, yells at her, starts piling up books in her arms, throws a book at another dude. His eyes glow and he leaves the library. He is a hothead.
He does not overreact at all. This dumb bitch.
Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
You don't even know how to turn on a microscope. You telling me it's over my head?
Oh, so she's bad with technology, but he's supposed to be some great genius when it comes to that?
I'm in the fucking class. I gave you
also,
not one,
she got her hands on it first. He tried to steal it from her, Amin.
He's reaching through the shelf to the other shelf to grab a book that's on her side. Who does that? Also, it's the classic two potential lovers meet cute in a library and they see each other through the shelves, except they're squatting on the ground.
If the resistance was, hey, I had it first. If the resistance was, hey, you're reaching from the other side. You're not even supposed to be able to get this book from over there. Then I'm with you guys. He is a hothead and he's out of place.
How does he even know what fucking book it is?
I know that's a very good question, but that's not what happened here. What happened here is she said, you're a jack, it's over your head, you're dumb. And her dumb ass, A, couldn't find the slide, and B, didn't know how to turn on the goddamn microphone.
No, I mean, she did what was necessary to get the book, because you know what? She ends up with a book. She knew how to push his button.
12 extra books. Attaboy, Todd.
Nikki follows him out, gives him the book. Friendship, but zero sexual chemistry has started. That doesn't stop him from getting real horny as they watch some, like, classical music demonstration or practice. I don't understand what that was.
So she chases after him, gives him the book. He's like sitting on the steps all sad. Then he chases after her, tries to give her the book.
Yeah.
And then he says, I won the Tri-State Science Fair. Then they go to the quartet. And he's so horny.
He's so horny. Oh my God, he's so horny.
The quartet, well, we'll get to that. Definitely, it gets a lot less subtle than that.
Oh, it gets so hornier. Oh my God.
My favorite part about it is clearly, clearly the music is not coming from them. Oh, rather, it is coming from a Casio keyboard.
Right.
Of when the, you know how it says violin, and it still sounds like a keyboard, but this is the violin sound. Neow, neow, neow. That's exactly what it sounds like.
He starts to ask her to be his study partner, but she thinks he's asking for a date.
He's not the only horny one.
Oh, she wants it too. She wants the jock's jock.
She absolutely wants it. You know how I know? Because the first time she laid eyes on him, she didn't know how to fucking turn on a microscope find the goddamn slide.
Cut to a tea party for the scholarship kids, and the hot girls are there. The dean introduces him to a benefactor. He introduces Todd to Lisa and Emily, the hot girls. He makes Lisa dance with Todd, and that's where Lisa's southern accent is really, really on display.
It's really bad, and then
Con Air bad.
I might have to dance with you, but I don't have to talk with you.
That's 100% not a pull from the movie. That is mean doing a perfect representation of how she sounds.
At this point, I'm wondering, what the fuck is going on with this dean? Is he a fucking pimp?
Because
he's introducing this benefactor, and he says that she has other endowments, and it's like the creepiest insinuation ever.
Hamilton University, more like Hornball University.
I couldn't tell if he fucked her or if she was going to fuck Todd, but he's Dean Pimp from this point on.
By the way, just going to throw this out there. Emily? Hotter than Lisa.
Oh, 100%. Chubb is playing the tuba. Styles is the caterer. Todd growls at Lisa as they dance, and he is horny.
There are 7 students that go to this school.
He dances her over near a table where Nikki is, then looks down Lisa's dress, then tries to grab her ass while smiling like a creep. Nikki walks off.
Todd is an absolute scumbag. So my attaboy from earlier, revoked, right? At this point, this dude, again.
He is. He's a scumbag.
Dancing with this girl that is clearly not interested in you, you decide to grab her ass, right? Get your hand slapped. You dance her over the table. See the other girl that you was trying to go out with a date with earlier. You was kissy, kissy, lovey, lovey. Make eye contact with her while you dancing with this other bitch. Like, what are you?
Amin, this is why this movie's racist, all right? Because he's starting to become black. If we're using the wolf as blackness, he's starting to become black and he gets super horny, doesn't care what he does in front of anybody.
We are pretty horny as a people.
All right. His nails get extremely long. He starts turning into a werewolf and starts freaking out. He's sweating profusely. His ears are growing. Hair is growing.
He looks at his nails. Nails are growing. He freaks out and then he shoves his hand in his pocket, to which I wrote the note. Yeah, grabbing her ass and then putting your hand right in your pocket. Yeah, that's inconspicuous. He looks like he's trying to beat off, man.
Well, he does look like he's busting a nut as he starts to transform into this wolf, man.
So then he sees himself in Chubb's tuba.
I bet he does.
Lisa freaks out, calling him a dog. I've been dancing with the dog.
That really gets to him, by the way. Cut him deep.
Oh, my God. Then some slapstick happens with people knocking into each other. A bowl of dip goes flying through the air. This is my favorite part of the movie. Dip goes flying in through the air. Before it lands on Lisa, someone goes, dip! Just yells dip. Like a heads up. Dip!
My favorite part is Dean Pimp comes in, he blames her.
He wants an explanation from her.
Miss Goldblatt, do you have an explanation? Yeah, motherfucker. I was standing here and some dip flew in the air and hit me.
After this dude turned into a fucking dog, by the way, if you want to handle that first. Styles says he's just got to be the wolf. Todd keeps wondering why she called him a dog. He's really upset by this dog thing. You're right, Maze.
Yeah, she really hurt his feelings.
The students just start hazing him by putting fleas on him in a class.
Two Asian kids.
Yeah, two Asian kids just all of a sudden, like, had access to fleas. I don't understand that racism, but I believe it's racist.
It took zero, and I'm talking about 0% resistance to get these people to buy in to doing this.
Everybody was in on it.
Hey. Put some fleas on that dude. You got it, bro. First of all, the idea that everybody in school and college knew who this guy was. Like, wait, what are we doing? We put fleas on him. Why? We turned into a dog. Wait, what do you mean he turned into a dog?
There's no social media. There's no text messaging. There's no email.
No.
That's just word of mouth. That's good guerrilla marketing.
Or wolf marketing.
All right. He leaves the class, runs into the dean.
Don't give me any of that back talk. If you're trying to push me, you have no idea who you're dealing with.
The dean has several really overly dramatic readings for his line.
John Astin, comedy legend.
Don't give me any back talk.
You know who he reminded me of, Amin?
Who?
The governor from Jade.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good, I like him.
What's the opposite of a future callback, I mean? I
believe it's like called a callback.
Okay, that's what it's it is. A Back to the Future callback.
The idea that he somehow, think about how many colleges there are in America, right? The idea you could pick up the phone and call each one of those people individually and let them know, hey, not don't let this guy box on your team because he's a fraud. Don't admit him into your school.
Don't let him come to school. He dressed up as a dog once.
Once. But this shows how dumb kids are because, like, Todd's, like, legitimately concerned at this point.
There's a bowl of dog food and a no dogs allowed sign on his door. His presentation for a science class has been replaced with dog magazine cutouts. The teacher ends class so she can speak with Todd.
Do they do pranks in college, by the way? Is that a thing?
No, I feel like that leads to fights or, like, getting kicked out of school.
Because nobody knows anybody. Like, you might prank your friends, but, like, there's no way a rando in my class is going to prank me in college.
Right, and I don't think outside of, like, frat behavior or something, like, there's no hazing. You're not going to get hazed.
Yeah, but racism happens in college.
Yeah, but I understand that.
If I'm in the science class, like, it's not like he's a wolf every day. I'm in science class, like, why are we fucking with this guy again? And again, the other part of this is, oh, because he turned into a wolf. I'm sorry, what? Like, you just take it for granted. Like, okay, yeah, okay, cool. He turned into a wolf. All right, we fucking got it.
Nikki asks him to lunch. He says, you don't want to be seen with me. I'm a dog.
He's such a dick.
The teacher says she wants to help him. Then Nikki meets Todd under a tree with a blanket and a picnic. She's horny for Todd.
She's got KFC.
What does she bring for food? Maybe you're right. This is a pretty racist
movie. This is a racist movie. She brings fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
And just hands it to him, assuming he wants it.
But I'm a dog.
Let me just say right now, drumstick, most overrated part of the chicken.
I like a drumstick.
I like a drumstick.
It's not the best, but I like it still.
It's overrated. It's,
I mean, the thigh's the best.
Thigh is also obviously the best, but the drumstick, it's just super inefficient. It gets all the love as far as people, oh, drumstick. But you think about it, like a lot of it is just a lot of sinew and gristle and parts that you can't eat. Like you get one good bite off the drumstick and the rest of it is just kind of all tendons.
Oh, you can
and
eat
ligaments.
Oh, you can eat it.
You can eat it? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, you can eat it.
You gross motherfucker.
He asks why she's doing this and she says, biologically speaking, it's fascinating what's happening to him. But he says, but I'm a dog. Then she kisses him and it's time to box, guys.
Real nice, quick smash cut to the boxing match.
It's a military academy against Hamilton.
What a coincidence. That's what happened. Smash cut. Smash and cut. What it is, huh? What's
Johnny gets knocked out, and Hamilton has lost all three matches so far.
Guys, this is another callback to the first movie. Because the first basketball game where Scott Howard turns into a werewolf is against the military academy.
Oh, okay. It's Chubb's turn. He's going to fight someone a lot smaller than him. The other boxing coach says he outweighs this guy by 50 pounds, to which Coach Finstock says, yeah, it's all water weight. Look at him.
That guy's a tub. Chubb is a tub.
Also, how did this dude get this job? Like, he has no bona fides, and he clearly doesn't know what he's doing.
And he doesn't pay attention.
He's flossing, right? He's flossing, like, this entire time.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
We don't mean flossing like early 2000s slang flossing, either. He's literally got some floss. And
literally has floss in his teeth. Gus's turn to fight. He walks into the ring with aviators on. He is ripped. This dude's built.
My man showed up with sunglasses on.
Sunglasses under a boxing helmet, and I just called this guy Trans Am Douche.
There you go, see? And then somebody else has to remove the sunglasses for him because he's got the gloves on too.
Aviators come off. He fights a student that's got to be 45 years old. I mean, this guy's so fucking old.
So this guy goes to another school, but in the opening, he rolls up at their school with two of the dean's booster hose.
Yeah, he's banging the booster hose. But the problem is this. If you go to a military academy, you typically don't have a lot of free time / like freedoms to just leave campus whenever you want. So that's, you know, like they could have picked something else. But again, all they did was carbon copy the script from the first one. And
Gus destroys the old student. Now it's Todd's turn.
Old student. Blue from old school.
Dean says this makes or breaks the coach's career. Todd's opponent is swinging wildly. Todd keeps dodging him. Finally,
his opponent, who's named Pug.
Pug says, can we hurry this up? I got a date in 30 minutes. He's horny too.
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, college was a horny time, to be fair. Real horny time. Finally, he starts landing blows. He knocks Todd down. Mouth guard comes out. He's face planted on the mat. Then Todd gets up during the ref's count by springing into action after he turns into a wolf. He jumps like 30 feet in the air.
I knew it. I knew Pug would win that fight.
Nobody seems to care that he's turned into a wolf. Fucking nobody. A wolf has jumped into the ring to box. Nobody cares.
Left high in the sky.
Nobody cares.
A good like 70 inches. He's clearing like...
Chubb and Styles are excited. Coach says not to stop the fight. Now Todd has footwork. He's dancing around. I put the note, Wolfhamid Ali.
Yeah, that didn't make it to the radio.
That was a today note. Lisa can't believe he has a right hook and can fight.
Yeehaw, she says at one point.
Chubb says to murder him. Pug is down. Todd's the winner. Lisa loves it. They win the fight and carry him off. But Hamilton still lost 4-2.
Yeah.
Like, no one seems to care about this. Party time in this whole fucking scene. I cannot. Styles introduces Todd in the backyard, says he sings. Throws the mic. Todd catches it and starts singing, Do You Love Me Now That I Can Dance? This is just a ripoff of Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, it was the year before, 1986. It was a direct ripoff.
I just didn't understand why, A, there'd be a party where he's singing. B, why he's singing a song that is a good 30 years old at that point.
Right.
C, why is he singing a song that's 30 years old at that point at this party while wearing a zoot suit? 4, why is he singing a song that's at least 30 years old at this party while wearing a zoot suit and dancing like it's the 50s with a bunch of girls that are dressed for a sock hop?
They're all fair questions. I did like his shoes, though. He had these bright red shoes. I really like those.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I was wondering if it was actually Jason Bateman in the suit at all times.
No. Because their faces are wildly different.
What's her face? The hater ass bitch shows up.
Nikki. Jesus Christ.
Shows up to the party. Sees him literally just singing. He's got a microphone in his hand. He's singing. He's serenading the crowd. He's doing his little shimmy dance or whatever. And she leaves immediately. You've been here for 5 seconds.
Maze, I figured it out. Amin thinks that she doesn't like black people. That's what it is.
Well, let me tell you, when she folds her arms, gets upset and storms off, I think she gave Elizabeth Berkley some inspiration here.
Oh, okay.
A little Nomi action.
All right, a little Nomi action there. I like it. These are my next three notes. They're having a howl of a time. Seems like the type of party with good food, werewolfing down dinner is the thing to do.
Oh, my God.
And then this has nothing to do with the party. It's just something I thought up. Where do wolves buy movie tickets? Fandango.
Wouldn't it be Fandingo?
Oh, fuck.
You fucked up your own joke.
For some reason, he zip lines from the balcony down to the ground.
Oh, you forgot about the part where he drops the mic and
keep singing. You can still clearly hear him as if he's singing into a microphone.
It's almost like he lip-synced that whole part.
He zip lines from the balcony down to the ground. Styles says, we've arrived. Styles is now selling all kinds of merch, which would be a huge NCAA investigation, by the way. College athlete with all this merch, there's no way. Todd, as the wolf, is wearing a fedora. Styles throws a frisbee for him. He catches it in his mouth whilst wearing the fedora. And everyone goes crazy.
Heavy sense during this slow motion.
And now we get our montage with Amin's favorite song. Who do you want to be today?
Who do you want? Yo, if you listen to that song, it will be stuck in your head for days. Who do you want to be today? Who do you want to be? Who do you want to be? Do you want to be like someone on TV? Just like someone on TV.
A lot of training in boxing. He uppercuts a guy out of a ring. He's skipping rope. God. Barely gets into a fight. He fights all the matches if he wants to. Chubb gets sad that he doesn't get to fight. The Dean loves it. Gus is at his fights looking furious.
Guys are getting benched in boxing. It's amazing.
Now we cut the Gus fight and he knocks a dude out. A reporter then jumps into the ring and says the championship is 2 weeks today and asks for a prediction, to which he says every dog has its day and this is his.
That is one hell of a quote. I mean, forget about for a second the fact that nobody actually has like beat reporters, coming into the ring with the lights down and like it's a real.
Do they even have college boxing?
They have to.
Do they? Why?
Don't they? Where do they get the Olympians from?
From boxing rinks.
Rinks? Are they skating?
Yes. They have to double dip in the cold weather cities.
It's like Mighty Ducks.
I had Mighty Ducks on the brain.
Oh, my God.
Todd is getting A pluses. The dean gives Todd a Corvette, and his dog loves
him. No, it's another Trans Am.
Oh, I thought it was a Corvette.
Do you just become a sunglasses douche as soon as you touch a Trans Am? Unrelated question, can you still get a Trans Am?
We find out later that he's not actually earning the grades. The teachers are merely passing him, which I really respect from the standpoint of corruption in collegiate sports. Having said that, Scott Howard legitimately got A pluses once he became a Wolf.
Todd is driving this Trans Am like an asshole. Actually, I mean, he's driving like an animal. He bumps the back tire of someone on a bicycle with the car and eventually runs him off the road for no reason.
He doesn't bump it like, oops. Like, he's driving up, sees a guy on a bike, starts to nudge him.
I mean, he's attempting vehicular manslaughter.
Yes, and Chubb is loving every moment of this. And again, I wrote, Chubb, how are you not seeing what's going to come down the pike here?
He got sucked in again, man. It's a life. It's a Wolf life. He pulls up on Lisa and Emily. They get in the car, and Chubb gets left behind.
Do they also come with the Trans Am?
Do you think they just get into any Trans Am they see?
They got a type.
He pulls up to a crosswalk and sees Nikki. She sees him with the girls. Styles comes back to the room. There is a do not disturb sign on the door. Chain is on the door. Emily comes to the door, tells him to go away, and she locks him out.
There hasn't been any dialogue in this movie for 6 minutes.
No.
Not a whole lot of dialogue in this movie.
Todd fucks both girls, Wolf style. Oh, now I'm just imagining Malin Ackerman just saying, fuck me like a wolf.
Cock me.
I've created a monster.
Emily answers the door, very scantily clad.
Woof.
But the underwear cut, it deflated any sexual energy she should have had. The cut of underwear in the 80s was just very not flattering, right? Like, it's got a huge arc.
Styles goes to Chubb's room. Chubb farts and has cookies in his bed, and he sleeps next to a refrigerator.
Because he's fat.
Styles says he's created a monster.
Styles, again, you lived through this. I don't know why this is a shocker. And two, I'm pretty sure if he said, come here, Styles, why don't you get one of you get Lisa, I'll get Emily, Styles would have no problem.
Oh, he would have been fine, yeah.
He got frozen out of the triangle offense, and now he want to cry about it.
He thought it was an Earl Thomas and his brother situation.
No.
Yeah, it's timely.
Topical.
It's a future callback, or is that a regular callback? I can't even tell with the time anymore.
Back to the future callback.
That might seem outdated by now, but this was like 2 days after this shit happened when we recorded it.
A day. It was the next day.
Back in the lab, that's not a basketball patois Twitter thing. They are literally in the lab. Nikki is mad at Todd, slaps him with a dead frog when he asks her if she's jealous, and she says they only like the wolf.
That's a metaphor for dick, right? They don't like you, only the wolf?
Yeah, like that's the part that I don't think Nikki very much understands. When someone is banging two broads at the same time, it's not because he thinks they love him.
He probably doesn't even register that they might be interested. They're both willing to sleep with him at the same time. Do you think Lisa and Emily only do threesomes? Because they're always with one guy.
Certainly.
They do whatever Dean Pimp tells them to do.
You do exactly what I tell you to do.
Do you think Dean Pimp was trying to recruit Gus? Is that why they're with him?
Well, that's why I was confused. That's like the main impetus of confusion. They just couldn't have him go to the same school because he has to be the antagonist.
Yeah, he's got to go to a different school. It's got to be a rival school. Why did it have to be a military academy? Because that's what they did in the first movie.
He throws a frog at her. She dodges it, hits another student. That student hits another student. A girl yells, frog fight. There are frogs flying everywhere. There's also one live frog there for some reason I didn't understand. The teacher shows up to the class really late.
Frog fighting in my lab?
40 fucking minutes late. And you know how I know she didn't just go to the bathroom and pop. She had her whole goddamn purse and satchel and everything.
And ends class immediately. Shows up late and ends class. A little stigats in everybody.
That's a stigats move for sure.
She makes Todd stay so they can talk. She says she knows about the car, the free grades, him coasting through life. He needs to use his gift responsibly. She says you can't face life as a wolf and expect it to solve all your problems. I disagree.
What the fuck is the metaphor there?
Don't try to be black. Just get through life the way you're supposed to.
I'm not understanding.
I guess the payoff comes later.
The grades thing is concerning. You need to, dude, you need to take your good. But getting the car and the girls, I don't see why everyone hating on that.
Yeah. I do love Jason Bateman stroking the stuffed otter during the scene.
He says he doesn't need the class. The road he's chosen doesn't need biology. Nikki's waiting for him outside.
What road is that? Okay, after you've done a small-time college boxing, what was his next plan?
Olympics. Nikki's waiting for him, says she hates to say it, but she misses the old Todd. She means the white Todd.
What a bitch.
You know, I never thought I'd say it, but I miss the old Todd. What happened?
He turned into a werewolf.
But that's not the real you.
The wolf lets me do what I want to do. Okay, it's a gift. I have responsibility to myself.
Responsibility? What about school? What about wanting to be a veterinarian? What about you and me? My feelings for you are real. They have nothing to do with the wolf. Those others could care less about the real you.
Look, I'm late and you're wrong.
Cut to mini golf. He's on a date with Emily and Lisa.
Okay, he puts in two balls simultaneously. Hey. And all I could think about was like, is this a reference to the threesome?
It's gotta be.
Put two balls in simultaneously.
But
oh,
that doesn't
yeah.
make sense.
Yes, it does.
I know. He should have had two sticks.
No.
He should have put one ball into two holes.
No, how do you do that?
Exactly. But it doesn't make sense. He doesn't have two dicks.
No. Two balls. That's why it's two balls, not two dicks. He doesn't have two dicks. He has two balls.
So they're the balls and he's the hole?
The coach told him that the guy had two thumbs.
Are they pegging him?
No, here's what's happening. They are the holes. He takes his balls. He stretches them. One goes in one. One goes in the other.
That's not one.
Okay.
Sexy. And two.
Okay.
How a threesome works.
How about this? They're both sucking on his balls. You guys happy now?
But just with one mouth?
They both... Oh, it was one mouth. That's true.
That's the way it's done, girls.
Anyway, Gus is there, tries to play through.
Why the fuck doesn't Gus have his sunglasses on, man?
Because we need the fire in his eyes.
Gus asks how they can take him seriously because he's a freshman with an awful lot of hair. Todd wants to fight. He says he doesn't fight chipmunks. He wants to fight man-to-man. Lisa and Emily go with Gus, and Todd is left all alone. Gus says that he's going to die in the ring, then crushes a golf ball with his bare hand, which is fucking impressive.
Shout out to Gus's best friend. Gus says he's going to kick his ass.
I don't fight chipmunks.
Not here, Gus.
Not here, Gus. That dude.
There's so much desperation, man.
He practiced for days in front of his mirror to deliver that one line. Not here, Gus. Also, Gus, very strong name. I like it. They don't make enough Gus's anymore.
By the way, not his real name. We'll get to that.
Not his real name.
This is a callback to the scene in Teen Wolf where he goes bowling with Pamela and then Mitch shows up. Mitch is the bad guy. Mitch is the Gus in the first one. And he says one of the most racist parts of the movie. He says, I know all about your family. Scott Howard's mom is dead in the movie. He says, I caught your mom stealing chickens out my backyard, so I shot her with a shotgun. Basically, very Lynch-heavy language that Mitch does there. Gus, not so much. Gus is just here to crush your balls.
Gus is just here to fuck two girls at once.
I like how Team Wolf 2 decided to up the ante. He's like, no. Can't just fuck one broad. He's got to fuck two of them.
Todd goes back to the Styles and Chubby, tries to make up with them. They both call him a jerk and walk out. Todd's all alone yet again, and he's wearing 1990s draft night pants. NBA draft fans, like, those pants are fucking huge and they're oddly striped. He goes to the empty boxing ring in the middle of the basketball gym. Uncle Harold shows up. Todd had asked to talk to him. Harold says he can show him some things from his boxing days.
Show him some things from his boxing days, which we haven't seen in quite a while, which made me think, hold on. If there's something in boxing that isn't used anymore, unlike pretty much any other sport, there's usually a pretty big reason why they don't use it anymore.
Because it'll get you killed in the ring for trying that. Todd goes to the library. He and Nikki make up. He gets a chance to make up his final at noon, his final test.
Tells her he loves her.
Yeah.
Dropped it kind of quick there, pal.
It's a 3-hour test. His boxing finals are at 3 p.m. He's in. Now he's cramming with Nikki as Send Me an Angel plays for the montage.
Send me an angel.
This was brutal as fuck.
Send me an angel. Right now. Right now. And by the way, in the middle of cramming for this one exam that'll determine whether he can stay in his preferred major and all that. Could fuck a little bit. Why not?
They start making out halfway through, and then they have a fuck break.
I'm not just cramming for this final, if you catch my drift.
Then he puts on a different sweater, which I can't tell if it's her sweater or not. Did he start wearing her clothes?
Upon rewatch, it's not her sweater.
Okay.
But at first, I thought it was like, oh, they're trying to show that like the sex was so wild, they wore the wrong clothes afterwards.
He gets back to studying while she's sleeping. He pulls an all-nighter, then goes to take his test. She's going to come watch him box.
She's sleeping because he gave her drip. He put the drip down. Put him in bed. And my Jimmy runs deep, so deep, so deep, put her ass to sleep. Woke her up around one. She didn't hesitate to call Todd Howard the top gun.
You think it's a full moon in that situation? He takes the test. The teacher interrupts him. He stops saying it's the best he could do because he missed a few classes. She skims it, maybe 2 pages.
3 seconds.
It's a 3-hour test.
And so he did well enough to pass the course.
He passed. Looks like he passed. What?
Looks like she's part of the problem, I mean.
Oh, my God.
He shows up to the gym. The coach wants to know where the wolf is. Todd says they're a team and will fight as a team, and that he wants to fight Gus.
Yo, shout out to Styles. Despite being super pissed at Todd, he's still selling that merch.
Oh, yeah. He's going to get that money. Chubb looks like he has indigestion, then starts singing the Hamilton song poorly. The dean comes in, tells Todd he could go to nationals and then the Olympics.
Oh my God, the dean comes in hot, baby.
From here, we go to the state finals, then to the nationals, the Olympics. Remember, this is only your first year. All you gotta do is fight and win, and I'll take care of the rest. Grades, cars, money, women. It'll be our little secret. I hope you don't have any funny ideas about not fighting as the wolf. Oh, no. Remember, I still run this school. I hold your scholarship.
First, he's promising him all this shit. Then it kind of turns into a threat. And at one point, he's holding Todd by the back of his head and, like, spits on him because he's acting so hard.
Yeah.
I would dare say he's acting his ass off.
He is acting. Oh, 100%. Great call. The gym is packed, which I'm like, why would the gym be packed? And then I wrote, I guess it should be because they're watching a wolf fight.
Gym's packed. Todd's teacher, the science teacher, the lesbian science teacher, shows up.
Not a lesbian.
Yes, she is.
Oh, God.
So the lesbian science teacher shows up. This is, once again, a callback to Uncle Howard showing up to the final, cornering the vice principal and telling him, hey, lay off. He's a good kid. He just needs to find his way. The vice principal pees on himself in the first Teen Wolf. In this one, there's a lesbian science teacher that shows up, tells the dean to lay off. The dean says, who do you think you're talking to? He'll do exactly as I say. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a man who is acting his ass off.
Is this your idea of a threat?
She says, you don't know who you're dealing with. Her eyes glow red. She growls at him. She walks away, has a wolf tail. To which I remember asking Amin this on the radio, do female werewolves have tails? Because I don't remember male werewolves having tails.
They do have tails. I've been playing Red Dead Redemption last few days, and yes.
No. I know a wolf has tails. I'm talking about a werewolf. Does a male werewolf have tails? Because I don't remember that. I don't think Hugh Jackman had a tail.
Does a werewolf have anything? Right? Like, it's not a real thing.
You mean like a dick?
He's got a dick.
Yeah.
Sure. For sure.
Also, sexual tension there, even though it means calling her a lesbian?
The walk away, she definitely sashays her ass.
I think Dean Pimp was trying to turn her out.
Maybe. Maybe he's trying to turn her.
Past tense. Already did.
Chubby gets to fight and he wins. A lot of rope-a-dope in his fight. An announcer comes to the ring to introduce Gus and Todd. Where does he welcome them, Amin?
What?
Maze, to be honest, this might have been the thing that upset me more than anything else in this movie. He welcomes them to Hamilton Memorial Arena. This place is literally the size of my high school gym. Literally.
I think it's smaller than my high school gym.
It is a high school gym with bleachers. And this asshole has the gall, the temerity to call it Hamilton Memorial Arena. Who are they memorializing?
What is up with this fucking announcer, by the way?
Clearly a man, but has a very, very womanly voice at times.
Screechiest voice.
Screeching, yeah. We find out it's Steve Gus Gustavsson. His name's not even fucking Gus.
Where's the I in Gustavsson? It's Gustavsson.
Gus not wearing sunglasses. That's my theory as to why he lost. Spoiler alert.
He didn't come in with the sunglasses?
No, not in this fight.
Dumbass.
Todd comes to the ring not as the wolf. The crowd is pissed at Todd. The dean asks what the meaning of this is, to which Coach Finstock says, tactics? Todd has the car keys in the ring with him for some reason, hands them to the dean. That's going to be a major red flag for any NCAA person there.
Imagine that in the middle of a basketball game. Like, kid throws John Calipari the keys to a Corvette or a Trans Am.
Gus is working him. Todd can't hurt him at all. First round is over. Gus punches Styles. Emily is the ring girl because, of course, she is. This is when I looked her up because I was like, all right, this Emily. Emily's kind of fine, actually, right? Like, she's in the ring girl suit and everything. So I looked up who she is. This is the only movie, only acting she's ever done. You know who she is?
Who?
She was married to Luke Perry, and they have two kids together.
No way.
Yeah. They were married from 1993 R.I.P. to 2003.
Luke Perry was creaming the... Wow. Giving the cream of the crop is what I wanted to say.
He was creaming. You're right. That's how they got the two kids. Another round of Todd taking a beating, but he isn't getting knocked out. Styles says they've got to throw in the proverbial towel if he's not going to win.
This made me so angry.
That's not how a proverbial towel works.
It's a literal towel.
It's a literal towel. That's how boxing works. You didn't have Apollo Creed's trainer saying, throw in the proverbial towel. Throw the damn proverbial towel.
Throw the proverbial tile.
Tile, yes. Shout out to Tyrese.
Harold from the stands tells him to throw an uppercut. That's apparently not Todd anymore. That's the secret, an uppercut, which, by the fucking way, he knocked a dude out of the ring with one an hour ago. Gus says, I'm going to make you howl in pain. Todd keeps taking a beating. He tries to get out of the ring. The ref asks him where he's going. He says home, and the ref says, let's box. What?
He gets fucking knocked out immediately. What?
He gets knocked down again. He won't turn the wolf, even though his eyes are glowing.
He's been down for like 30 seconds in slow motion.
Even for slow motion, this is a really slow 10 count. And by the way, only at 7 when he starts to get up. Mickey Mouse, I love you. He takes more punches. He says, come on, dog, fight like a man. Give me your best shot. That's when the uppercut happens. He starts pounding on Gus. He's destroying him, which is good because Gus was ahead on points, guys. So he needed to knock him out if he was going to win this one. Gus gets knocked out. His fall is better than Jack Nicholson's death in The Departed. They rush the ring. Todd is the new regional champ.
And when he gets knocked out, someone starts throwing popcorn at him, which is just, guys, act like you've been there before.
Please do not throw stuff into the ring. You don't want to get the school disqualified. That's what would happen. Todd moves past Lisa and kisses Nikki. Then Chubb grabs Lisa and kisses her.
Yeah.
A real Me Too moment.
Problematic.
She walks away. Roll credits to Do You Love Me?
Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?
We got a little bit of trivia here. The course schedule when Todd has his registration card is girls volleyball, candle making, French chefs, and fencing.
Thanks, Styles.
One of the reasons Michael J. Fox refused to reprise his role in the sequel to Teen Wolf is that he had no desire to go through the arduous process of getting into makeup to play the werewolf. Was he going to be a boxer in Teen Wolf 2?
Try my hand at this. Also, I kind of feel like it would just completely do away with the whole storyline of Teen Wolf 1, which is, I don't need to be a wolf. Let me try being a wolf again.
Well, if they made Teen Wolf 2 with Michael J. Fox, would they just have done basketball again?
Would it have been street ball? Would he have gone to the inner city? Would he have been accepted, I mean?
Only as a wolf.
Would there have been black on wolf crime?
No, they give him all these special daps and stuff, and then, you know, because he'd be cool. And then they'd all get high on crack then, because it's the 80s, and they're black. I mean, he's a wolf.
During the first boxing practice, Coach Finstock is reading a Boy's Life magazine that says, make room for the wolf. And then my favorite bit of trivia was Alyssa Milano was scheduled to do the third film about a Teen Wolf girl playing football in high school. She was going to receive help from her father, Scott, and her uncle, Todd. But the poor performance of this film and Air Bud canceled those plans.
Air Bud didn't do well?
That's what it says.
I'm a dog. They think I'm a dog.
Damn, Air Bud caught a stray.
On their show, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert specifically gave the film two emphatic thumbs down, with Ebert complaining that they had picked, along with Date with an Angel, the two worst films possible to be released on the same day. What's Date with an Angel, you might ask?
Future
Cinephile. It's a Phoebe Cates movie with the tagline, Jim is about to marry a princess, but he's in love with an angel.
Please let it be like a real little angel.
The picture was released during an early, mid-1980s cycle of werewolf movies. These included Wolfen, 1981, The Howling, 1981, Teen Wolf, 1985, Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf, 1985, Full Moon High, 1981, Teen Wolf 2, 1987, The Company of Wolves, 1984, Howling 3, 1987, and An American Werewolf in London, 1981.
Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf.
Golden Dumpster nominees, kind of a deep field here. Trans Am, Sunglasses Douche, a.k.a. Gus, screechy-voiced announcer, Coach Finstock, who seemed completely checked out the entire movie, Chubb, Styles, the sing-along scene, Lisa's southern accent, and then Dean Pimp.
Mine's easy. I know what mine is.
Is it? Or then you go with yours, then.
Dip!
Oh, yeah. You love that.
I do. I really love that.
I'm torn, man. I'm torn between Dean Pimp, who acted his ass off in this movie.
He did.
And Coach Finstock, who just had so many great one-liners. I'm going to go with the montages, all of them.
Any montage, wow.
Any montage with music in it, add me. Whether it's Who Do You Want to Be Today? Who Do You Want to Be? Or whether it's Send Me an Angel.
When he was driving, there was this song called Outrageous. That was amazing, yes. Too.
Yeah. Excellent soundtrack.
Yeah.
Despite a late push from the screechy-voiced announcer who came in like hot fire, I don't know if you guys caught the part where Emily was taking her robe off and he was like, oh, let me help you with that.
Yes, I did catch that. It's everyone in this movie.
Horniness everywhere we go, but it's got to be Dean Pimp. Sean Astin's dad, John Astin. Golden Dumpster.
Can I change mine? My Golden Dumpster is horniness.
Emily? Oh.
Just 90 minutes of people trying to get it in. Overfile, I mean.
I don't even remember what I gave it on the radio, but guess where I'm going with this. I'm going to give it a file.
You gave it a file on the radio?
Because to me, this is the essence of what a cinephobe movie is all about. It is awful. It is unintentionally funny. It is memorable. And it has some semblance of a storyline, which cannot be the same for Theodore Rex. I hate that motherfucking movie so much.
Maze?
First of all, I want to give a shout out to Damon, who campaigned to get this movie watched on Cinephobe for almost a year at this point. And he's been pushing for it the entire time. So shout out to you. You're the opposite of a terrorist, whatever that is.
You're a Cinephobe hero.
It was really fucking bad. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot of terrible acting, but it was enjoyable. It was the fun, kind of bad. Jason Bateman, just kind of watching baby Jason Bateman run around and do stuff, knowing that this is his first part. You can kind of see the traces of what he became.
Yeah,
you see a little
bit, right? Yeah, some of the reactions and everything.
I wanted to ask the question, has Jason Bateman eclipsed Michael J. Scott's career at this point? Michael J. Fox's career?
Who the fuck is Michael J. Scott?
I just did an office brain fart there. I think he has, based off longevity.
Big time.
Fuck you guys. That's not a fair fucking comparison.
Healthier, too.
Hey, has Steph Curry eclipsed Pistol Pete's career? Like, you know, that's
the same
right,
argument
man.
That people make when they say LeBron played more seasons.
Right.
Except the other guy is dead. Or he's not dead.
Wow. Did you just kill Michael J. Scott?
Michael Scott. Long story short, Dean Pimp and his antics really, really hooked me. This announcer guy, I'm fascinated by him. It's a file.
Long story short, like Michael J. Fox's career. Jesus
Christ. Also, the orgasm during the dance.
Oh, yeah. That he has. Yeah, he did come during that dance. We've all done it. There's a lot to digest here, right? In terms of good and bad with the movie. I did enjoy it the first time we watched it for Cinephobe on Mad Dog Sports Radio. On the rewatch, though, this time, you know, there are times where I'm just like, what is this movie? What is happening? Why is this the way it is? But it was a file then. It's a file now. I could watch this movie a lot. It sweeps.
Like, again, the unintentional humor is so high.
I would watch it before I watched the first one. They were both on right now.
Yeah, I think so, too. Oh, damn, we need a better exit line than that, right? Say it again. Say it again. Say the same thing you said.
I would watch it before I watched the first one. Like, they're both on right now. I'd pick Teen Wolf, too.
That's because you're racist.
Next time we make love, you introduce me to Jade.
that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Next week, let me find some information about this movie because I know nothing about it.
Wait, didn't the episode already end? But now we're wrapping up.
I guess post credits. Are we doing post credit scenes now?
Yeah, I mean that's what we're supposed to do. Are we doing? Okay. Are we not doing this?
No, we are. It's just it's amazing.
Okay. All right. All right. That's gonna do it for us next week. Why are you laughing, man? All right. That's gonna do it for us this week. Next week. We review the 1989 movie Teen Witch, starring Robin Lively and Dan Gauthier. I don't know who either of those people are.
I just know Maze is super excited to have so many teens in a row. There's your fucking ending, guys.